Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. My guest today is Mari Sukers. We're just trying to make contact with her. We're having a bit of a problem making contact, but we will. Our topic is going to be Darkest Before the Dawn. And, you know, with what is going on in the Middle East at the moment and around the world, actually, we are looking at a deep darkness that seems to be enveloping our world, and we cannot allow ourselves to fall into that darkness. Rumi said, "If everything around seems dark, look again, you may be the light." And I think that is what we're all being called to do. We're all being called to look at what is this time calling on us to do. Where are we standing? How can we not become hate-filled, angry people? And there is a lot of anger around at the moment. And we do have a responsibility not to feed that anger. And as much as it is difficult, I've often seen groups of people who are almost celebrating the anger. Well, when I say celebrating, it's the wrong word, but they are fueling the anger. But one person says something and somebody else adds to that. So it's anger upon anger upon anger. And we have to be the ones who step in and say, let's look at a different way of seeing the world right now. What are we being called to do? And Mukundi, there's just a message there, if you wouldn't mind just reading it, from Mari. Mari is going to be talking to us about her own dreams for the future, and I can't wait to actually get her on air, because George Orwell said, it's not so much staying alive, it's staying human that's important. What counts is that we don't betray each other. And I think, quite honestly, when you're hearing at the moment, there's so much suspicion around different groups and different people, and what are we being asked to do? I think we've got Mari on the line, and we're going to be saying hello in a moment.
I'm well. It's a beautiful, beautiful weather in Cape Town. This whole week we are having temperatures into the 30s, and you know how beautiful Cape Town is.
Absolutely.
When there's warm weather.
Oh, wow. And Mari, you have great plans. I started my program by saying that our topic is Darkest Before the Dawn. And I think what you do in your life is find that light within the darkness. And that is something that we can all learn from. I quoted this, it's not so much staying alive, it's staying human that's important. What counts is that we don't betray each other. And that's by George Orwell. Now, Mari, let me just talk about you for a moment. Mari and I met in 2024. We've never met when there hasn't been a war on, quite honestly, Mari. You know, isn't it amazing that we were meant to meet in this time of disunity in many ways, and in our own way, you and I are trying so hard to bring humanity and unity in. You are the founder of The Voice to Parliament, and you were a former member of Parliament. And you were part of the Christian Democratic Party. What are you doing now?
Yeah, I'm in that very, what do they call it, strange phase of transition, right? Moving out of active politics in national parliament and starting Voice to Parliament as a platform to continue the work that I've been doing and that I feel passionate about. And I also moved back to the Western Cape. I was on a sabbatical in the Northern Cape. Love the Karoo. We have properties there. So transition in terms of moving to the Western Cape, which is my hometown, or my home province rather, and getting Voice to Parliament up and running, which we are now putting together a governance structure. We're still working on and identified campaigns that I believe is very important for us to champion as a civil organization. So my focus is really, you know, it is, I have a multiple focus. As you know, I've got a 17-year-old that is still in school. So, from a personal perspective, I think, what am I busy with? I'm transitioning really into the role of activism, much more focused activism, and trying to raise the platform that it becomes influential and impactful in its reach. Certainly, that is a massive focus for me right now.
And I was reading on LinkedIn, one of your posts was in October 2025, and you said it's time to return to the mission of building an army. And you talk about for at least a year away from our local government elections, are we closer now? And our nation is at a vital crossroads, a moment that will define the future our children inherit. So tell me about the army that you're building. Is that army part of the Voice to Parliament?
It certainly is part of Voice to Parliament. With any platform and in the political context, politicians listen when it affects their numbers, when it affects their influence, or rather their sense, their fragility is in the amount of people that either support or oppose the policy or the agendas that they have. We have always in South Africa, we have a rich history of protest and not accepting things as they are. One of the things that we have successfully done is to put pressure through pressure groups on various issues on government to move the needle. But one of the things that we have not done, I believe that we need to, in terms of the Judeo-Christian principles and activism, Christian activism, what we haven't done is to unify around the key issues that we want either government to champion or that they need to, and things that we believe is not right. So my aim has been, when you met me at that breakfast, one of the things that I said was to raise 1 million voices.
Right.
And the platform of Parliament or Voice to Parliament for me, firstly, is to use it as a platform to speak truth to power, to communicate and be a voice for the communities that I feel strongly and care deeply about, of which one is the Jewish community. And of course, the communities that that I service, to champion that, but also at the same time to raise a grassroots movement that are aware, educated, and push towards the changes that we want to see. And not, I said it the last time on the program, to not disengage between elections, but to continually engage around the policies we want to see, the things that we are dissatisfied about in terms of government performance. So very much so, it is for Voice to Parliament is the platform of engagement, certainly with Parliament, and also an avenue to raise the grassroots movement or voices that can action on things that we believe needs to be actioned on.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on 101.9 High FM on the Finding Human program. And my guest today is Mari Sukkers. And she's remaining remarkably calm considering we couldn't contact her immediately. You can WhatsApp us if you'd like to on 061-895-1019. Our topic is Darkest Before the Dawn. But Mari is talking about how we ourselves can take responsibility and change our future. What does our future hold? What do we want to leave for our children? And her, she's the founder of The Voice to Parliament. Mari, I love the story, and I'm just going to ask you to repeat it always. But Mari was raised by a very, very strong mother, Mrs. Magdalena Rex, and she has a remarkable story of her own. Mari, we have new listeners signing in every minute or every half minute, literally. So please just tell me a little bit about your mum. I love her story. It's such a story of power.
Yes. Well, my mother, I told the story before, but my mum was 11 years old when she was taken from a kidnapped, actually, from her mother's home on the Cape Flats. My mum grew up the first part of her life in District 6, and then with the Group Areas Act, they were moved to Kotzebos. This is on the Cape Flats. And even though she had such a traumatic childhood, and not much of a childhood, because she had my sister when she was 12 years old, she had such a strong North Star, if you could say that, very strong moral compass. My mom, for her, she always used to say, one of the lessons, there are many, and she, you know, my mom, what became very surprising to me as I, you know, learned more about learning and, you know, how easy stories convey lessons better than what you can in the abstract. It's amazing that my mom used stories, and she would use sentences that to this day, I can recall each one of them. But one of the things that she said is that you never need to fear any person. If you cannot say something in somebody's face, you don't say it behind their back. Mm. And it was one way for her to teach us. She says, straight talking is never insulting, is the saying she used to say. So say what you need to say and mean what you need to say, you know. But my mom, and I really believe it is just, I can say it's part of who she was, because remember, my mom was 11, kidnapped and sold to my father, who was a migrant worker. But my mom's moral compass is what both, all three of my sisters, we have a lot of who we are as people, a lot of the things that we have become, the things that we, the reason why I remain within communities and work so hard in communities was because of my mother's example, really, for us. But most importantly is the fact that she demanded integrity, a personal integrity. That it was the most important thing. She used to say that you can be poor, you can never be dirty. You can be poor, but there's no excuse to be dirty. That a woman should never, beg for anything. She had two hands. God has given you two hands. You work with your two hands to support for your children. So the issue of personal responsibility, not the principle of personal responsibility, of personal integrity, are lessons that I learned from my mom. She was fearless in how she maintained her own personal integrity. So I told the story about us growing up on a farm, and we lived in a house. We never had our own house growing up. So we lived in a house basically that was given to us by the farm owner. And one day the farm owner came into the house and looked at the house. The walls were covered with roots because of kachel in Afrikaans. What do you call it in English now? Sue, help me.
I'm trying.
Yes, the chimney. The chimney was smoking. Yeah, it was smoking, and it caused the walls of the kitchen, especially, to be with root. And he said to my mom, "Whose dirty house is this?" referring to the walls. And she turned around and she said, "A house? You call this a house?
Oh, wow.
Is it my house? This is your house. And it is your house that you are failing to paint. And it is your house that you are not looking after and wanting us to live inside. And you call it my house? It's not my house. It's your house. You fix this house."
Oh, wow. What courage. And what was the response?
He walked out, but I think he did it to antagonize my mother, most likely, because I remember as a child that he had this naughty twinkle in his eye, because I think he also knew that she was she was this woman that never kept quiet, you know.
A force to be reckoned with.
She didn't keep quiet. Yeah, she would just say what she wants to say. And needless to say, they came to paint the houses the month.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, they came to paint the houses, yes. Yeah.
One thing you
did. And to clean the chimneys.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Well done, your mother. Yeah. Wow, that takes courage. But you know, one thing that you did say on one of our programs was the hand that rocks the cradle rocks the nation.
Yeah.
So what did you mean by that?
So in our communities right now, especially in my community on the Cane Flats, one of the biggest issues or challenges that we face is the issue of vulnerable children, right? And at the core of that is the breakdown of the nuclear family. And especially for single mothers that are either going out in the morning very early, coming back late, they work in retail, they're supporting their children. And there are so many gaps in our protection or social services network where maintenance courts being fathers not being held accountable for maintenance. The dysfunctional system basically exasperates the poverty of families, especially single-headed households. Mm. And my biggest cause that I champion, if you want to reach children, you need to reach the mother.
Absolutely.
And because my mother had the biggest impact on my life. I don't come from a rich household. I come from, if I would mention, and I cannot recall now what my mother used to earn per month for her to pick grapes or to pick tobacco, it is really, we lived below what would be considered the breadline. Mm. And yet my mother raised the children with such a sense of dignity and fearlessness and demanded of us to be reckoned and hold ourselves to account to a higher standard in spite of our circumstances. That was the influence of my mom. A lot of the decisions that I've made in my life, a lot of the things that I aspire towards is because of her. Mm-hmm. And so when I see in the Karoo, in the Cape Flats, the number of vulnerable children, my biggest call to people that are in a position, whether it be government, whether it be business, is that we need to champion the kind of policies that will strengthen family and especially single-headed households where women or men, of course, are heading up, but mostly women. Did you know the majority of single-headed households are women that are heading up those homes? Mm. So in South Africa, if we want to deal with crime, reach women. Reach the woman who is one who is raising that child. If we want to better the life of children, the best gift we can give a child is for a mother to have the ability to raise her own child.
I have to
And unfortunately, our society is so fragmented, so polarized, everything becomes about bad politics. Mm. Now, notice what I said, not politics, but bad politics.
Bad. Mm.
So every issue becomes a campaign slogan rather than the solutions and the policies that will make a material difference to the life of people who needs it the most. The kind of policies that will enable single mothers to either take their children with them to work if they work in a corporate, where corporations get a tax deduction if they have a creche or a center for children close by. Those kind of things are things we must champion for mothers to be able to stay longer at home and raise their children rather than leave the baby with a stranger after 3 months.
Absolutely.
Those kind of things must be championed by us because those are the solutions that will ensure that children grow up in a balance. But we never get to the policy issues because these kind of politics functions on outrage. We need to become outrageous about something. Mm-hmm. And outrage never leads to solutions. It always is like a felt fire. You're just lighting up the problem, but you are never getting to the solution, you know?
And then more excuses come in about what they're failing on.
More excuses, and also the populist politics that we see in South Africa, where people use the problems that we are facing for them to campaign on and for them to exploit the sense of disenfranchisement, marginalization, or anger of communities. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the campaign and rallying point, rather than what is the policies? What is it that the plan? No one sells us a plan. Everybody is selling us the problem. And the louder you are shouting on the problem, the more, and this is the problem we have as society. We almost respond, not almost, we do respond and react to the loudest voices or noises rather than investigating what is it that they have to offer, especially in our communities.
So it's selective outrage, isn't it?
It is selective outrage. It becomes a platform.
And you know,
A platform.
It does. And on one of your platforms on Facebook, I saw you talking about, it was actually very good. You were talking about, take a listen as I explain the need for legislative reform to protect whistleblowers and our end to BEE. Now, whistleblowers, I think, have always, I mean, if I think right back to the apartheid era, whistleblowers really were unbelievably courageous and certainly were killed for their courage. What are you talking about with whistleblowers?
So one of the gaps that is in the legislation, the existing legislation, was that whistleblowers, there was not money ring-fenced that would enhance the protection mechanisms for whistleblowers, and I'll explain to you. Currently, whistleblowers many times are forced to give up their jobs. They need to go into hiding. They go into safe houses. And when they go into the safe houses or places of shelter, and they've given up their, or they have disrupted their own lives, especially their employment, there's no compensation for them. So people cannot indefinitely live in these safe houses. And number two, the safe houses are many times within the community they come from.
So tell me, just explain, please, what is a whistleblower? For instance, in your community, what would a whistleblower be?
We have examples, very good examples of whistleblowers that are in the media right now. One of the whistleblowers, for instance, is anybody who reports corruption or wrongdoing from within an organization or from within a department or within the state. And we have various of them. I'll give you one example, because the podcast that I am releasing deals with specifically his story. He wouldn't be seen necessarily as a whistleblower, but I do think I would define him as a whistleblower. It is Lieutenant Colonel Charles Kinnear. He was the head of the anti-gang unit in the Western Cape. In 2018, he wrote a letter to the then minister and to all of the executive and his senior managers, in which he highlighted the dysfunction within SAPS. This is in 2018. The obstruction in cases, the challenges from within, where there are opposing factions within the police services in the Western Cape that obstructs cases, that deliberately causes cases to not be properly investigated. He sent out that letter in 2018. That letter was his frustration with a system that was not working and that was utterly dysfunctional, and where SAPS was working against each other. Lieutenant Colonel Shaul Kinia, of course, was assassinated. Mm. He was assassinated in front of his house with his boys inside the house. Mm. And before he was assassinated, and that letter in 2018 that he sent out to the then minister and to all of the senior managers and executive, they asked for, or the minister requested for an investigation. A report came out of that investigation. That report was never acted upon. Never acted upon. The report came out in 2019. Fast forward to his assassination, he gets assassinated and another investigation gets started. A report comes from that and nothing happened with that. Mm-hmm. In between, Shaul Kinia and his family received protection from the police services for a short period of time. Then the protection was just removed or was recalled without anybody notifying him.
Oh.
In fact, on the day before his death, his phone was pinged more than 3,000 times, and his immediate commander only informed him in the evening that his phone was pinged. No protection was sent out to him.
Oh,
so when we talk about whistleblowers, and he was killed the very next day after two in front of his house. Mm. When we talk about whistleblowers, the definition of a whistleblower is anybody in a system or within an organization that raises alarm around corruption. And the reason why we called for the reform of the whistleblower legislation was so that when Parliament in order for funds to be released, you need a legislative framework for that funds to be released through an Act of Parliament. And the legislation is what we called for, and that the President now in Isona has agreed that that legislation will go through Parliament.
Wow.
I hope it explains it.
Yeah. We'll get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest today is Mari Sukers, and you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019 if you would like to leave us a message. We're going to now listen to a very short YouTube by Rabbi YY Jacobson on this is the reason why you exist. I think you'll enjoy this, Mari. I'm sorry about the noise in the background.
Diversity is the one true thing we all have in common. The old saying goes, what a fundamental truth in Judaism. Every soul has its unique, individual, and indispensable mission in this world. You have a contribution to make that was never made before you and will never be made after you. Each one of us is an indispensable note in the cosmic divine symphony. You must bring your light and your music into the world. But here's the question. How do I figure out what my mission is? How do I discover what is my unique contribution? One answer is contained in two words in the book of Psalms. King David says, "May oivai techakmeni," literally, make me wiser than my enemies. But there's a much deeper and personal interpretation. May oivai techakmeni, from my enemies, I can gain much wisdom. What does this mean? It means I could learn so much from those things or people in life who frustrate me, who get me angry, who annoy me, those things that scare the living daylights out of me, those people or things or experiences that frighten me. Instead of running away from them, they are here to teach me so much about who I am, what my work consists of, and what my unique mission is. You see, those things that your soul needs to accomplish in this world encounter tremendous resistance. So when I'm experiencing this type of fear and frustration, I, or you, should never run away from it. Very often, here lay the unique opportunities, gems of insight that allow me to figure out who I am and what is my unique light to bring to the world. Fear not your enemies. Gain wisdom from them.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. If you would like to contact us, please do so on 061-895-1019. My guest today is Mari Sukers, and our topic was Darkest Before the Dawn. And we've been talking about South Africa and what Mari runs, which is the Voice to Parliament. She's the founder of that. And Mari, did you hear what Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson said about learning from our enemies? You know, you have been to Israel many times since 2023. And at the moment, we are definitely in a time of great confusion. And I think all looking for a moral balance of what are we being called to in this time? And what do you feel that you're being called to in this time? Mari, can you
hear? It is quite scary because I can hear you. I think it's quite scary because it's a conversation that I'm consistently having with myself. Around what am I to do in the face of everything in my country, certainly the international policy position of South Africa that has taken a total adversarial position against Israel, against the values that are important for me as a Christian. And for the community that I come from, I'm talking about the Christian community. What will I do with my dissatisfaction, certainly? And what am I called to beyond my dissatisfaction? What is it that God requires of me? And it's interesting because there are domestic issues here at home that needs address and that needs a strong response from us as civil society. We cannot leave it up to those that are just sitting in parliament that drives political agendas aligned with their political party. There are universal issues that face every South African, white, black, pink, yellow, all colors of the rainbow. If you live in this country, it certainly affects you. And the issues, the challenges that we face are not easy things. It's things that there is such polarization that there is a backlash when you take a position on any of these issues, whether it be Israel, but particularly Israel, when you take a position that in any way is positive towards Israel, in Israel becomes the what we call the weerlig afleier in Afrikaans. I don't know what to call it in English, but it becomes like a lightning rod for all negative and, you know, toxic a backlash. And I consistently have the conversation.
Go on, you consist. We're going to go to advert in a moment, but just finish your sentence. What are you going
to consistently say? Have the conversation with myself. What is it required of me? And it's the same with the case that I'm highlighting of the Kenyans. I believe that the call that we all have, regardless of where you are, is to stand for truth.
Absolutely.
To stand for truth and to pursue justice.
As hard as it is. As difficult as it is. Thank you. We'll get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and my guest today is Mari Sukers, and our time is going very quickly. We've had a bit of trouble with this noise. I'm really sorry about that, but it's been great being with Mari. Mari, you know, I think Viktor Frankl said that if we give up hope, we give up life, literally. And I think that is the one thing that whether we are in Israel, whether we are in South Africa, we have got to hold on to hope for a better future for all people. You know, Elie Wiesel, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and the Holocaust survivor, said, just as man cannot live without dreams, he cannot live without hope. If dreams reflect the past, hope summons the future. And I have a feeling that that's what you and I and many of us are being called for. What is this time asking of us now? And we've got to look deep within ourselves to see how we answer that call. What would you say? We're going to be told to end soon, but tell me about what you feel your main call is.
I really do see myself as a voice for the communities that I represent. I do believe that the platform that I have been given was given for me to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves and to highlight the issues that are important to them, and not just highlight them, but to fight for resolution, whether it be legislative or whether it be policy, or whether it be, you know, situations within communities. That is as simple as that. My husband, yesterday, we went out to have a discussion. We have that too little nowadays. And one of the things he said to me is, you've mentioned every single thing that is, because he asked me the question, what is most important to you now? And he said, you mentioned everybody, but you forgot your husband. You put me on the list of things that are most important. And I think that, you know, in all our fights, in all our concerns, the biggest contribution we give to the world is for us to have healthy families and to send out strong, resilient children into the world. Family is the cornerstone of healthy, strong communities. And so as a mother, I certainly have to more than once remind myself that that is one of the most important roles for me, other than the other roles of our communities that I champion.
I must admit, I have to agree with you. A strong family with strong values can reach out to the world, no matter how confusing the world may be. From a strong base, we have our strength. I'm being told to wrap up. Mari, thank you so much for being on my program. We will do it again, hopefully in a more peaceful time. Right now, let's just pray for peace in South Africa, in the Middle East, and indeed in Russia and Ukraine and around the world.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you so much. Keep praying and keep doing what you're doing. You are a strong woman, and your mom would be very proud of you. I'm sure she's blessing you every single day and by your side also. Thank you. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi, and thank you, Makundi.